Welcome to Reality TV, your source for snarky reality TV recaps. I'm Jody, your best friend and inner voice, as together we cringe watch all the shows we love and love to hate. For all premium content and bonus episodes, become a member at patreon.com/realitytvpod. You can also find me on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at realitytvpod or realitytvpodcast.com for links and so much more. And now, on with the show. Hey, welcome back, friends. Aren't your jaws just picked up off the floor after watching the most loveless, depressing wedding of all time? Are your tears dry now that you've been able to sleep soundly last night knowing that Butch was safely in rehab? Are your throats recovered? Do you need maybe a cough drop, some numbing Sucrete spray after yelling at Amber to get the hell off the couch and get out of your pajamas for once? I mean, the sucker punches just kept coming last night. And I've said it before, Teen Mom is one of those shows that you go into thinking, oh, tonight's just going to be a little update. I might see Bentley folding his ears into themselves again, which he did during the reception, by the way. But, you know, it always happens that we see something or someone that we didn't know before that we're like, how did we not know that was going on? I mean, does Queen Kim know? Because I have a feeling if she knew, she'd step in. Well, we're just going to kind of go with our Queen Kim here, Queen Kim adjacent, and talk about our little Butchie Bear. You know, I have a soft spot for him, and it was just hard to watch, and I'd rather just get this sad stuff out of the way because, you know what, I was having a crummy morning, and we're going to turn things around. I saw a guy at the gym that was, what do you call that, a bench press or whatever, where they're laying down, they lift the bar with the weights above their chest. Yeah, well, it was too heavy and he couldn't lift it. And I was the only one that could see that he was like stuck under this thing. I don't know. I mean, was I supposed to go help him? But anyway, I was having kind of a cruddy, rainy, gross morning. When I saw that, I was like, you know what? Someone loves me up there. Like it was a gift to me. So we're going to take that momentum and we're going to go into this podcast and knock it out of the park. All right. So Tyler is flying with Butch to Austin to check him into rehab. And on the way, he tells Butch that he's not going to have to fork over this, whatever it was, 47 grand. The facility, BRC Recovery, is going to give him the scholarship. 6 months free. I think that's that 3 month inpatient and 3 month sober living. And I'm no Dr. Drew, board certified physician and addiction medicine specialist, but I think Butch hearing that a third party was stepping in to believe in him, pay for this program, it might give him the motivation to stay clean. I mean, I don't know. I could be wrong, but it just kind of gave me a pause to wonder why that got him so choked up as opposed to Tyler and Caitlin paying for it. Now, once they're at the center, they start this intake process, and we learn that it's Butch's 9th or 10th time in rehab. Now, maybe I am a cynic. Maybe I've been watching too much Love After Lockup, but I was actually surprised it wasn't more. Like, I thought he was going to say, oh, 25, 30 times. Perhaps that's the state of our prison and rehab system, that we don't supply that or make it more readily available. But he's there, and it is November 14th on this day. So that means if there was a 3 month inpatient, let's see, November, December, January, February, he should be out like now or last week into the sober living. Anyone have any information on that? Some eyes in the area to look out for Butch? And if you do, you better be calling me, sending me a message, because I will be down there. I'm his biggest fan. And you know what? I would say future lover, but I think that ship has sailed. All right. Now, Tyler. I don't know if he was overwhelmed or tired, just not feeling it, but he was very despondent. He was just kind of, yeah, to everything. And maybe it's just that it's emotional, probably just as emotional for the family as it is for the addict. But something the therapist, the admin, whoever that woman was, something she said really triggered Tyler. And that was that Tyler's not responsible for Butch's happiness, and it's probably been a long time since he actually met Butch. Oh, I don't know. It was sad. And okay, maybe I'm a little hormonal. I don't know. I just cry easily at things. But I got choked up too because Tyler said he's never really met Butch. He's never really met his dad. And he's right. I mean, between the drugs and the amount of times that Butch has been in and out of jail or prison, that is so freaking sad. I mean, those of you who have kids, look at your kids. I mean, can you imagine them just not knowing their dad because when he's there, he's in an altered state? I don't know. Okay, I'm probably getting way too into it. But anyway, not too much more happened with them because, I mean, he's going into rehab. That we probably can't see a lot of that stuff that's been talked about because of HIPAA laws. But we do know that Butch's drugs of choice are crack and cocaine. They have a very heartfelt goodbye. And again, I was bawling because I cry at everything. I mean, show me a baby being born, forget it, or old people holding hands. And especially when the old guy still calls his wife my bride, like this is my bride. It just, oh God, it kills me. All right, tangent, back to Teen Mom and the itsyoursexlife.org promos that I can recite in my sleep at this point. Well, we got our sad storyline out of the way. Let's go on to a snarky one. Lift our moods a little bit. Amber, that means you. Christina starts with telling Gary that Amber wants to do a joint birthday party for Leah. Let me guess. Gary and Christina had already planned it, and Amber's just too lazy as fuck and too late in the game to plan something on her own. So she's just offering to, I'll just pay whatever half you're doing, and or just really probably just add it to the tab of her child support that she owes. Now, speaking of that child support, Amber better be up to date on her payments, because when I saw that she was at one of those strip mall 3D, 4D ultrasound places playing the newlywed game with Andrew, that pissed me off because she's spending, I mean, those are approximately about $100, at least around by me. I don't know where they are. Could be like $25, wherever the hell they are in Indiana. But I mean, if you have money to just be dicking around to do that when you can get that done for free, or I shouldn't say for free, you can get that through your insurance at a doctor's office, she better be forking over some money to Christina and Gary. Now we find out it's a boy. We all know that because we're kind of behind on the news now. And Big Head Andrew is just happy as can be. Amber's mom, she's still in a fog. I think she's still thinking that they are at that apple orchard. Like they're just waiting in line to go pick the Granny Smith apples. The only good part about that appointment for the ultrasound was getting to see how Amber's boo-boo tattoo has been shaping up and stretching out over the past, 9 years. I had forgotten all about that horrible amateur portrait tattoo of Leah's face that she had done on her torso. It is so, so bad. And just think, Leah's tattoo head is going to be growing to a Gary size head by the time Amber is 9 months pregnant. There's Amber's karma walking around with Gary's giant noggin wrapped around her stomach like Bethany Frankel's skinny girl wrapped Volkswagen. Now, fast forward to Amber's house, which has these Christmas lights being projected all over it, except she's got them turned up to like turbo speed or something. I hope she doesn't have neighbors with a family history of, epilepsy, because she's sure to be liable. She's going to have to claim that on her homeowners if someone just suddenly seizes on her front lawn. Now, the outside is not the only shit show. Inside, Amber is wearing a Scooby-Doo costume or something. It's one of those adult footsie pajamas, and she's in her assigned seat on the couch, covered with a blue blanket. Andrew is to her right, closest to the kitchen, so he can fetch her pre-dinner when she's ready. Now, you know, I have given Megan King Edmonds shit for acting like the first person to ever be pregnant, but Amber is right up there. Except Amber has been pregnant before. I think this is why it is all the more annoying to me when she's explaining to that incredibly annoying male producer, the bald guy. She's saying like, oh, it's just weird. Like my stomach, it's like, I don't know how to explain it. It's like getting bigger or like I'm feeling fuller in the middle. Like I'm getting chubbier or something. Like there's something in there. Okay. Which is it, Amber? Your mother of the year because your hashtag mom skills with Leah, like you tell us, or you're a new mom who is fascinated and refreshed with how you never knew your body could create such a miracle. I mean, it's infuriating. Now, we think this is the worst of it, but it's Amber, so it's not. She's made a big plan to tell Leah that she's having a boy during Leah's birthday party. Now, Amber says Leah was hoping for a little brother, a little boy, but I still don't think Leah's birthday party is the time or the place for Amber's big gender reveal. Let your kid have her moment. It's not about you, Amber. It was like a very Shannon and Michaela from Unexpected. Remember those two? Can you already see that dynamic playing out or what? Now, fast forward to the party day, and Amber arrives with Big Head Andy. She sits down, and she starts in with the, oh, gosh, I'm hot. I'm having hot flashes. Oh, wait, can't be hot flashes because I'm pregnant. Oh, I feel fat. Look, I'm fat. Oh, well, I guess it's not fat. It's because I'm pregnant. Shut up, Amber. I mean, just think, if Christina were walking around running her mouth like that, can you even imagine Amber's response? She'd be pissed that Christina was taken away from Boo Boo's big day. Now, speaking of big, here comes Gary and a sheet cake big enough to feed the entire state of Indiana. Somehow, he's practically spinning this cake like it's a pizza pie. And for real, I was cringing. I was just watching that thing bow and flex. I mean, Gary must have a lot of experience balancing a few pounds of carbs on the turn of a dime because he managed to pivot, turn, and land that cake down like Sully on the Hudson. Leah blows out her candle and feeds Amber the icing from it. Oh, okay, I'll eat anything because I'm pregnant. Zip it, Portwood. Move an inch and I'll split your lip. Okay, sorry, name that movie. Who knows that reference? Now, fast forward to the Shirley farm, and producers ask Christina and Gary what Leah thinks or what she said about having a little brother. And they both respond, now I know they can play things up, but I actually think they were being very honest because Christina's like, honestly, Leah doesn't really say anything. She hasn't been around Amber since she found out she was pregnant, so it's not really even on her radar or she's not thinking about it because it's not there in front of her. And Leah had said that she wanted a little brother, but awkward, she was actually talking about Christina and Gary, a little Gary Jr., if you will. Now, Gary says he's just worried about how Leah is coping on the inside with everything. It's not just this new sibling, because she had a lot to deal with Matt, and I guess they spent a lot of time doing things together with one another, and suddenly he's gone. Then Amber stopped coming around. Then Big Head Drew showed up. And now this baby is coming. It's just, it's a lot. It's, in my opinion, too much for a little girl to have to just accept and deal with. Now, I'm not Gary's number one fan in saying that, okay? He certainly has other agendas that he likes to push. And he likes to make Amber look like shit, let's be honest. But thank God for Christina, because really and truly, she does take good care of Leah, and she at least has a loving mother figure in her life on a daily basis. So, Christina, I'm not a big fan of your hairdo, but thank God she's there. Now let's talk about Farrah next. Spoiler alert, we still didn't get the Farrah firing. We start with Farrah and Sophia getting a baking lesson somewhere in LA. God, they love a cooking lesson. And Farrah and Deborah are there to record a special for MTV. That's what Farrah keeps saying. We're here to record a special for MTV. I'm assuming, based on that last scene with them taking their selfies, that it was that horrible. Oh my God, it was so incredibly bad. That New Year's Eve special, right? Or am I wrong? Did I miss something? If I did, it wasn't that good enough to go back and watch. So Farrah is really trying hard to avoid Deborah. So she's planning all of these activities and their carpoolings, comings and goings, so she can have an excuse why she just cannot see Deborah. So Deborah is alone in her hotel room. Well, I shouldn't say alone because she's there with a camera crew and a producer, but she's not with Farrah. And she is calling the love of her life, her dream man, Dr. David. He answers, wishes her a happy birthday, and says he can't wait to marry her and become Mr. David Danielson, EMBA. And just kidding, he basically just said, okay, your sign sucks, he's got to go by. I really, truly think, I said it before, and this is not an insult, I think it's just a possibility that he's possibly, potentially got some Asperger's, he's on the spectrum, he's just got zero social skills. It's, in my mind, it's either that or he's just a total asshole, which, I mean, really, perhaps it's more likely. Now, the redhead producer is in the room with Deborah, and she's just pretending like she didn't hear David hang up on the birthday girl. So she transitions to, what's going on with you and Farrah these days? Deborah's answer was very interesting. She starts in with her ugly cry baby voice. I'm not even going to attempt to do it because I don't want to hurt your ears and I don't want to hurt my soul. But she says she did a sex tape. It was a mistake. And now she's moving forward. Thank God. And now she's doing adult webcam videos and I love her unconditionally. I would fall on my sword for her. I just want to tell her I love her and I don't want her to hate me anymore. Now, how do any of those separate components of that answer go together? Like it didn't answer any question that the producer asked. I'm seeing that nasty side of Deb, that manipulative part. She had to get it out there on camera that Farrah did porn and now she's doing it again with the webcams. But Deborah is a Christian and she loves unconditionally. Ooh, I mean, that is some messed up stuff right there. Now, even with this relationship in all kinds of limbo, Farrah agrees to go to aerial yoga with Deborah and Sophia for her birthday. It's that activity, I think one of the Married at First Sight chicks did it a couple seasons ago, that Sam girl, where women wrap scarves or yards of fabric around their legs and they dangle around from the ceiling. I have actually accidentally done this to myself before when I had my daughter and I purchased one of those. It's called a Moby wrap. It's like 3 yards of fabric and you just hold your baby and you wrap this thing around you. I was a mess. I'm not coordinated or granola enough to pull it off, but I looked awfully similar to the Abraham women just trying to get myself out of this self-imposed sling I had encased myself in. So I do not understand the appeal of that activity at all. Now, I didn't catch why Farrah then allowed Sophia to go back to the hotel with Deborah. Somewhere in that, I missed it. But the second Deborah was alone in the car with Sophia, ooh, man, she used that chance to just pound it home to Sophia that she really, really, really would be happy if baby Goop would come to her wedding. It was so weird because Sophia answered like, yeah, duh, I'm going. But then she said she wasn't. But then she said she was. And then the don't touch me. Okay, so clearly Sophia doesn't know the right answer, right? I mean, she doesn't know, do I please my grandma? Do I please my mom? But the don't touch me part, for an 8-year-old to respond that way to their grandmother, simply just touching their hand. I mean, we all hate Deborah, but she didn't like violate Sophia in that moment physically. Is it upsetting? Is it concerning? Is it appalling how they're both acting? Yes, but Sophia's reaction, I don't know. I honestly have been thinking about it since last night and the only thing I can say for sure is that I would never allow my daughter or son, who are the same age, to speak to their grandmother like that. Even if I didn't get along with my mom, I would be so embarrassed. I'd be upset that my kid would ever respond to someone or speak to someone that way, especially a family member. Oh my God. But you know what? Maybe I'm just being too hard on Sofa Loaf. Maybe she's having a hard time with her mom at the doctor's office, and it can be tough for a kid to see their mom suffer through an outpatient lunchtime vaginal rejuvenation that's been necessitated because your head ripped her crotch open. And porn. I mean, that too. But oh my God, that step by step, sorry to bring you into this NKOTB, that procedure was so bad. We have seen our fair share of vaginal rejuvenations. Cynthia Bailey, Kelly Dodd, all the housewives get them done. But can I ask why Farrah had to be in just her bra to do it? Like, does her labia extend that far up that she would need to undress that fully? I don't know. I'll actually don't answer that. But later, Deborah is getting her makeup and hair done for this filming. And she's telling the redheaded producer again that she's pretty sure, I don't want to say it, Farrah and Sophia are going to surprise her. And they're going to tell her that they've decided to go to her wedding and that's going to be her birthday gift. Deborah is so wrong, but it feels so right watching her be wrong, doesn't it? There's few things in life that can bring you that amount of cringeworthy joy. Now, Deborah finishes and heads to the car to wait, and we find out that Farrah is holding up the car. The crew, the production, the filming at the studio, we're all waiting for Farrah because she's getting ready and putting in these ridiculous colored contacts. I thought they went out of style in like 99, to be honest. But finally, Farrah appears, and it's like suddenly it's tracking Bigfoot filming style as they chase her into the car. And she's saying she doesn't know why, I think it's to Deb, that she was waiting in the car. And then she snaps at the producer chick. I don't like you. I don't even want to look at you. Now I know no one likes you. And something like you're getting in the way of my life or blah, I don't know, something like that. And she rolls up the window, drives off. I would ask you what the hell that was all about, but do any of us know? We better get that firing scene next week or else. Or else nothing. We're going to keep watching. But Jesus Christ, it's about time we finally get to this, right? Okay, and now the bride and groom again for the second time. Now all we get to really see of the actual teen mom in this teen mom episode, Macy, is her curling her hair for no damn reason because it ended up straight anyway. So today is Ryan's second wedding to Mackenzie. He still has black hole scary eyes to me. So I don't know, is something still in his system or is he still actively using that day? I don't know. But he's getting ready and he's with Larry and his groomsmen. He's supposed to be writing his vows to Mackenzie, and she's got a cute little notebook that he's supposed to write them down in, a little keepsake. But since no one tells Ryan what to do, he's not going to do it, right? You tell him to do it, he's not going to do it. If it was lightly suggested to him, he's not going to do it. If it was his idea, he'd do it. Okay, I'm beating a dead horse, but I mean, seriously, what an asshole. He won't even take 5 minutes out of his day to write a few sentences to his wife. Ugh. Okay, you know what though? Maybe it's just a thought. Maybe he's thinking, this is my second wedding. Why would I be even doing this anyway? This is kind of stupid. Okay, I can see it, but still, he should have just written the fucking vows. Now, the only thing he is really insistent upon is getting his mom's hairbrush and hairspray. This grown man still uses his mommy's hairbrush and hairspray. Drugs aside, this mommy hairspray, hairbrush sharing thing they have going on, that is enough to swipe, what is it, left, right, up, down, I don't know. I met the mister, the good old-fashioned way on a blind date, and I just never let him leave. But that would be enough. I mean, that is a hard pass. Maybe that's a new question. Those of you who are out there who are single, does he own his own hairbrush? Okay, start with that. Anyway, where's Mackenzie? She's upstairs, downstairs, somewhere with her bridesmaids reenacting the Katy Perry Last Friday Night video. Oh, they're not? Okay, I just saw her retainer in her mouth, so I just figured that was a choice. Okay, kidding aside, really, what is going on with her mouth? What is the orthodontia going on? Is it braces? Is it a retainer? Because if it's a retainer, wouldn't you take that thing out before a camera crew comes in to film you on your wedding day? I don't want to rub it in, but we met our deductible and I have a bottom occlusal guard for my grinding teeth and I have a clear retainer. It's not a Invisalign. I'm not, you know, Melinda Gates over here, but I wear them nightly, okay? However, you can trust me that if even an intruder breaks in my home in the middle of the night, I'm taking those things out before he kills me. I'm not going to be having my jury see my crime scene photos and I have those in my mouth, okay? I have some class. Okay, now back to the wedding. Ryan shows up to the church and Mackenzie literally high knees it into the bush. Like she sprints in a wedding dress. She doesn't want Ryan to see her, which works out perfectly because Ryan doesn't want to see her either. He just wants some shots and some dip to tuck in his lip. It pains me to see people do this. Okay, I'm going to get on a soapbox about chewing tobacco very soon. So I'm just going to move on because chewing tobacco triggers me. Okay, so finally it's time for Mackenzie to walk down the aisle. Analysis of her wedding look. I think she looked pretty. I think the dress looked good on her. I liked her hair for the most part. But the fake extensions in the back were too blonde. Like the blondes didn't match quite correctly. And I thought she was a little lot bit over tanned orangey. Okay. But she did look pretty. She gets a most improved from wedding number one, at least. Now the ceremony begins and Ryan is chomp, chomp, chomping away on his gum. It looked horrible. I'd be pissed if I was going to walk down the aisle and I would see Dave up there just chomping on his gum. I would be so pissed. But I mean, I guess if you're going to weigh everything that happened that night, that would probably be like one of the most joyful things you saw. So there's this stupid who's on first moment with their vows, but Ryan ends up going first with his zero notes to read from. He says basically, "Oh, I love you and I promise to support you," the end. Meanwhile, Mackenzie's vows are all very lovey-dovey. Every chick watching this was cringing, though, because you would know how pissed you would be if your husband didn't write his vows like he was supposed to. It is the epitome of the saying, you had one job. Now they're finally announced, and now Mr. and Mrs. Edwards. Notice they didn't say, "and now for the first time," because it's actually day, whatever, 270-something. But this is really where the wedding went from bad to, I don't know, painfully bad, train wreck, whatever you want to call it, disastrous. They're not even at the end of the aisle. They're still in the, what do you call it, chapel church, when Mackenzie tells Ryan, doesn't even ask him, tells him, "You're drunk." And he's like, "Yep, mm-hmm." I mean, you see that Ryan is seeing this day as a party and Mackenzie was seeing it as a day to be a loving day about Ryan loving and appreciating Mackenzie. And that's just not going to happen. And as much as I think Mackenzie sucks, that day sucks for her. And I feel so badly for her because what is she going to do, right? I mean, what do you start a fight on your wedding day? There's nothing you can do. Where are you even going to go to fight? Okay. I mean, it's just a building up of friction and not being, you're just not even capable of being on the same page the whole night because one of you is totally resentful. The other one, I don't even know. Was Ryan really having a good time? He probably was because he didn't give a shit that Mackenzie was upset, but it was just so terrible. At one point, pretty soon after they walked in, she wants to go finish paying the bartender and he just wants to get drunk first. And that's where we start hearing about this $5,000 that he gave Mackenzie. He asks her what she did with it. She said she paid the bills, that she had to pay someone $1,000 today, and she only has $100 left. Now, Ryan, the rest of the night, he just perseverates on this $100. I'm thinking he must give her an allowance every week, and that's his form of control. That's the one thing he can control in the relationship, where she spends it, how she spends it, because they did have, if you remember, a similar conversation on the engagement photo day. Well, now it's time for the first dance. Somehow neither of them know what the song is going to be, which seemed very odd to me. If you're going to go through all the elaborate planning of this wedding and you don't have a first dance song, I don't know. But during the dance, Ryan just keeps asking, okay, really, like that's really all you have left is $100. Now, either he is an accountant of sorts, he's really big into QuickBooks, or he's perhaps seeing how much heroin he can score with $100. I don't know, just a thought. Now the dance ends and Ryan cheers and says woohoo as he ditches Mackenzie to go talk to some of his friends. And you can see her dad kind of side-eyeing how they're interacting with one another. I mean, this guy's just got to be horrified at Mackenzie's choice in Ryan, right? And I'm wondering if Mackenzie forgot she was mic'd at this point because, well, actually, you know, maybe she knew she was being mic'd because she starts venting to a group of friends at a table, like, oh, how about them vows about Ryan's because he didn't do it. And one of her friends jumps in, just piggybacking on why the day sucks, how horrible they looked when they were dancing with one another. First of all, why would you actually say that to a bride? Oh my God, you guys looked so awkward out there. But I'm glad she said it because we were all thinking it. But ouch, that had to hurt. Now, how about that Macy and Jen getting all cozy and buddy-buddy during your son and daughter-in-law's wedding? Macy even said something at one point like, oh my God, she's like my mom. She's my mom. Ugh. And they were doing this during the cake cutting. Eesh. Yikes, yikes, yikes. Mackenzie will certainly be doing a Mac attack after rewinding and rewatching that on DVR a few times because you know that's going to be coming up at some sort of family meeting, which I'm sure they still have when Ryan goes and picks up his hairspray and his brush over at Mama Jen's house. Now, other notable events. Larry makes a speech and he gets choked up. Ryan starts to get emotional too, but not with Mackenzie. As a matter of fact, they aren't even sitting at the same table or close to one another during these toasts to them as a couple. Did you see that? I mean, I totally lost whatever the hell Larry was saying because I couldn't get over that. I mean, they couldn't even reach each other to clink glasses. Ugh. Okay, serious question here. Do we think Ryan and Mackenzie will last? She is an enabler, okay, so it's possible they could go, what, all the way, long term, whatever you want to call it. But if you don't think they are going to stay together, how long are you giving it? I'm going to say they will last, but no more than 2 years. I think Mackenzie's going to ride this teen mom train for as long as she can. So I'm going to go on the record right now. I'm going to say by, what, we're in 2018. I'm going to say by December 2020, Mackenzie has filed for separation or divorce. Well, that does it for the not-so-teen moms of the OG. I will talk at you tomorrow with some Married at First Sight. Remember, that's on tonight. I'll be tweeting during the show at RealityVPod on Twitter. Check out the links in the show notes for quick and easy way just to click to all the good stuff. Thank you for being a friend and stay salty.